Good evening, one and all, and welcome to this evening's A Proper Football Podcast. So we've got a bit of a different one today. We've got two guests on. We're going to have a really interesting show, but let me introduce you to everyone. For those who may never have watched this before, let me just introduce you to Mr. Nigel Callahan, who's here on a weekly basis, ex-Watford, Villa, Plymouth. I was going to say Plymouth then. He had nothing Derby. To do with them. Derby. and a few other clubs in South Africa, so on and so forth. Play for England under-21s, and he is our resident pro, ex-pro football player. Moving along, we've got Mr. Greg Lake. Give us a wave, Greg. Hey, Greg. Hey. He's been on the show before, so it's a welcome back to Greg. And Greg, obviously, was part owner of Billericay Town men's side, but now he's the owner of Billericay ladies' side. Which is good because that ties us in nicely with the conversation we'll be having later on in the show. And then last but not least, it's Mr. Dougie Brimson. Give us a wave, Dougie. Dougie, I'm not going to get it right. Author, film producer, film editor, director, responsible for a number of films, top of the list, Green Street, I guess. But one of my favourites, it was We Still Kill the Old Way. Did enjoy that as well. Doug is responsible for that. Top Boy and 17 books, I believe.
18 books.
18 books. Doug has come on tonight as well as being a football fan to join us to talk football. He's also to talk about his new project, which is the Roy Lana film that we're looking at helping you promote tonight. Cool. Well, we're going to crack straight in with our footy chat. And I'm going to open up with what one should I open up with? Let's open up with the England manager. We've got to open up with that one, really, empty, I suppose. It's been the talk all week. So, Thomas Tuchel, we did talk about this last week, Nigel, if you remember, and we did say that he was on the top of the list.
Yeah.
Well, now he's got the job. Now, obviously, everyone will have a different opinion about this, but the main opinion I guess some fans have got is that it should have been an Englishman and not a German, and there's a bit of controversy on that. So let me open up to you guys. Let's start with Greg. What are your thoughts on this appointment to the England manager?
I think he's a top manager and coach, isn't he? Can't deny that. But like a lot of people, I'd have preferred an English manager, England team. England manager. And I think the thing that disappointed me more than anything else was that there were English managers who were more than capable of doing this, in my opinion, who weren't even approached because we couldn't afford them. That statement from the FA about Eddie Howe just baffles me. You know, we couldn't afford him. Biggest job in England, surely. I mean, why couldn't we talk to them? Why couldn't we make an offer to Newcastle? That's my view. I would have gone for Eddie Howe, but that's just a personal view. Yeah. But I would have preferred an England manager.
Does it bother you that he's German or not? You're not worried?
I think these days, a few years ago it might have done, but these days I think you've got to go for somebody who's successful and wins things.
Yeah,
I haven't got a problem with him per se, and I actually think he's probably better suited, and I saw this in the press a couple of times this week, he's probably better suited to running a national side where he hasn't got to deal with all the bureaucracy every day and week with a club side. So from that point of view, you know, can he win us things? Yes. But should he have been an English manager? Yes, in my opinion.
Yeah, okay. Just before I hand over to Dougie for his comments, just to remind everyone, you can get involved. It's not just about us, it's about you too. Just pop a comment on whichever platform you are watching us on, and get involved with the show, make a comment, ask us to talk about anything, ask questions, just fire away. Dougie, what are your thoughts, England manager?
I think like everyone, I'd like to see an English manager, but it's, you know, it's two things. First off, we've seen pretty much that the Premiership is bigger than the national side in terms of managerial appointments now. That's fairly obvious. But the other thing is, it's a poison chalice. It goes back to Graham Taylor's days, you know. You're damned if you do and damned if you don't. And Southgate, for whatever you think about him, you know, there were periods where he got absolutely butchered, you know, quite rightly, in my opinion. Yeah. And so, you know, you've got to ask yourself, AFU was in that position, would you want a job? Would you want to be considered for the job? But then would you take it?
Yeah.
When you can carry on doing what you're doing in the Premiership, you know, and everything that's associated with Premiership football, do you really want to line yourself up for the sort of grief you're going to get as England manager? You know, probably not.
No, that's right. Good evening, Carol. Good evening, Jordan. Evening, gents. Nigel, we obviously discussed this.
Yeah.
If I remember rightly, you weren't keen on Tuchel, were you?
I wasn't keen. I wanted Guardiola to get the job. Yeah. But having said that, I always stated that I didn't want Lee Carsley taking over because he's a carbon copy of Southgate. Now, the one thing you get with Tuchel is he's managed the Premier League side and they play at a high tempo. So any Premier League manager that we'd have got, you're hoping that we're going to start playing at a faster tempo than the England side play at the moment, which is clearly not getting the best out of some of the players, Phil Foden and other players like that. They're playing quick football at the clubs that we're at, and then they're going to England and it's all slowing down again. So I'm quite open to giving Tuchel a chance. I want to see him bring something different to the table, which I don't think we'd have got with Lee Carsley, because obviously Southgate's running the first team. So if he's running the under-21s, he's going to be sort of following the same layout as Southgate. So, yeah, I'm okay. Let's give him a chance. And, you know, it's all about winning these days. We want to win a cup. And if we haven't got an English manager that can deliver that, then why not get someone from another country?
I'd just be happy to see an English football manager who actually focused on football 100% and rather worried about all the other agendas that seem to be.
Yeah, and Southgate definitely got involved in that.
It just detracts from what he's trying to do. He should be 100% focused on the job, and the job is winning games. As simple as that.
Absolutely. And do you know what? That's sort of my view on it is as for the him being a German manager, I don't think there's any argument with this because, one, everyone would have bit Guardiola's hand off. There wouldn't be a fan who would be disappointed with that. He's Spanish. And not only that, there's a long, long list of English players through the years that are not English or not born English, you know. So there isn't really an argument, I don't think.
I don't think so. I mean, they've already started having a go at him about refuting, you know, not saying, yeah, I'm going to sing the national anthem. Well, he is German, so why should he sing our national anthem?
Nah, yeah,
let's
exactly.
Let's get realistic.
And like I say, we've got players that are national. I mean, even John Barnes, Luther, they're not born like Englishmen, but they adopted the country. And it sounds very much like Tuchel's adopted the country.
Yeah.
His words have been quite good. I think give him a chance. And one other thing that I really am looking forward to, I don't think he's a yes man. He certainly won't get involved in all the politics like Southgate did.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to really give people a bit of a jolt. Just quickly, good evening, Gareth Williams, Ben Cliff, Terry Curran. How are you, sir? You'll have to come on the show one day, mate. Absolutely. Let's get you on. You know Terry, don't you, Nige?
Yeah, yeah. Hi, Terry.
Yeah, you'll have to come on, mate. Let's get in touch. So let's put up that, actually, because there's a comment from Terry now. So has St George's Park been a success or a failure given the lack of English coaches? Good question. Very good question. That is a question that I've heard already this week, actually. And one of the aspects, what this is about, I think, is that it was St George's Park set up was supposed to be a stepping stone for English coaches, managers. And so the question is, gentlemen, if you want to jump in, feel free. Was it?
Yeah. I think we've produced a lot more coaches, but they all look and sound the same. You know, what we've done is we've given them a blueprint of coaching. And yeah. I don't know if you know much about the badge system, you know, the CBA UEFA licensing, which a lot of the coaches go to St George's Park to as part of that badge process. And I've met a lot of the coaches that get to the top of that, the UEFA A, and they're not managers. They are coaches. They analyse football. They tell people what to do in terms of positioning and stuff, but they're all taught the same way. It takes a lot of the individuality out of it. So for me, it's a great facility from a facility perspective. Brilliant. Gives the teams a home. Has it been great in terms of producing more English coaches? No, I don't think it has.
I think you've only got to look at the top 10 in the Premiership to see how many of them are actually English to see just how successful it's actually been. Which is not really.
I think you hit the nail on the head when you said it's the same blueprint. And that's the exact reason why I didn't want Carsley to follow Southgate, because it is the same blueprint. So
it is. And you hit it on the head, Nige, when you said that, you know, it's about the pace that they're moving the ball around. We knock it around, but it's so slow. I mean, the only good thing about watching England is you can nip to the loo, you can go and put the kettle on, and they're still passing it around. You know, they haven't got anywhere.
There's Ben Cliff there. Only thing I want to know, this is quite interesting one, gentlemen. Only thing I want to know is the FA said they interviewed 10 managers for the job. I want to know who the 10 are, because I can't name 10 managers that would be good enough for the job. Interesting that, I suppose. I can't think of 10, I must admit.
I can think of a few, but you know, if they couldn't go for Eddie Howe because they couldn't afford him, then I do worry about who might have been on there, because the same criteria must have applied. You know, so anybody in the Premier League, you know, Pep, everybody would have loved Pep, but they weren't going anywhere near that. So how far down did we go? I think we probably ended up with a good option, you know?
Yeah. Darren's normally on the show with us, doing his vlog yesterday at Harbour. Yeah, it was. No, it weren't. Lutterworth. He did his vlog at Lutterworth Town versus Nuneaton Town, is it now they're called? I guess nobody knows whether St George's Park is a success if they aren't being given a chance. Okay, cool. I'm going to throw something at you guys off the back of this. We say about the Premier League, there, you know, obviously, now the Premier League with the amount of foreign managers, and we've had this discussion, Nigel, in other shows where we've sort of said about young British players, English players, whatever you want to say, getting that opportunity to play at top level when most teams in our Premier League, and I say our because I'm going to be sarcastic about it in a minute, most teams that play in the Premier League probably have maybe on any given day, other than a couple of sides, only maybe 20-30% English players playing for them. So my throw this out to you guys, is the Premier League now no longer an English football league? Is it an international league worldwide? Because that's where most of the money is coming from abroad, not from here, for that particular league. What are your views on that? Anyone? Jump in.
It's a money game, isn't it, now? So you are going to have the teams, the grounds have got the money to go out and buy the big players from abroad. And obviously, when I was growing up playing football, you know, you was given time to develop into a good player. Now with football being a business, they want success straight away. So they're buying the finished article. And that's where you're getting all these foreign players coming into the game, because they're probably at the top of their game, wherever they come from. So,
I'd agree with that. I think, I mean, I don't think any of the top leagues are owned by their individual nations anymore, because, you know, there are businesses that own clubs in Serie A, in Premier League, wherever. And it's more of a group thing. It's more of a business, as you said. And I mean, it's because I don't like Premier League football anymore. I don't like the top league football anymore, because it really isn't the game that I fell in love with. We've had that conversation before. But you know, with the number of foreign players in there, the number of foreign owners, the number of foreign coaches, it's not the same.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think the link, the traditional link with your hometown, seems tenuous at best at some clubs. You know, it's just a club that, it's like almost like a franchise now.
Yeah.
And it's really sad. The only thing that's keeping the soul of the clubs going are the supporters, you know, and they're an integral part of the atmosphere that Sky is continuing to sell. And yet they're the ones who are being shafted left, right and centre. It's madness, you know, the whole thing. It's a shame, really. But I'm the same as Greg. Premiership football leaves me cold. You know, I'll skim through Match of the Day at best. I won't. It's very rare I'll watch a game live.
No,
because it's just it's not. Yeah, it's great football and all that, but it's like there's no guts or glory there. You know, very rarely you see it anyway.
And that's why you're seeing an exodus of fans actually now beginning to go to their local clubs. I don't know about Billy Ricky, but attendances seem to be up everywhere. In the cup last week, there were sell-out crowds. Yesterday at Ketchum, all right, they've got the big derby in the cup with Northampton, so it probably boosted it. But they had over 1,400 in a step seven or step three, however you want to look at it. You know, and everyone I speak to, and I do get to speak to a lot of people at non-league, they're there because of disillusionized.
Supporters
as well. Don't get me wrong. Every club, every non-league club has a hardcore, genuine.
Yeah, absolutely.
But people are going to their local clubs because disillusionment.
Yeah, I go and watch Hemel Town, and it's like it's old boys gathering. You know, they're at home tomorrow night, so you'll go there and it'll be full of Watford, Tottenham, Arsenal. You know, all local to Hemel. We'll just go along and watch some decent, you know, blood and guts football.
What's encouraging for me over the last few years, so it's a bit like Dougie, you know, you go to watch your non-league side and it was a meeting of the old boys. But over the past couple of seasons, there's a lot more youngsters going to watch non-league games.
Yeah.
You know, there's a crowd at Billy Ricky. Yeah. They've got a drum and I hate drums. But hey, good luck to them. You know, they're behind the goal. They're making some noise. They're pushing each other around, but it's great to see because it creates an atmosphere. But it's nice to see them going to that kind of game. Yeah.
And Greg, when I paid my visit to the club and did that sort of mini documentary thing, and that was a brilliant experience. And I still think it's one of my best experiences actually because you give me a complete insight to that club. But the one thing I think I mentioned to you, one thing I noticed that day was the amount of youngsters. Mm. It was brilliant. Yeah. And I've got to say the same at Ketchum. The kids there from Tots and a few dogs.
Yeah.
You know? And it truly is amazing. Let's just catch up with some more comments that have popped up. That one there from Carol. Don't we need players to stop being wrapped up in cotton wool and start to play for their country? Okay, I think some players, maybe that's maybe a possible answer. It's an international league, but what it has done is improve the standard lower down the league pyramid.
They obviously didn't watch Watford yesterday.
Jesus. I think I know where he's coming from, and Greg, obviously your involvement with Billericay Town. As I just said, a lot of young, good English players don't get the opportunity like they did in Nigel's day.
Yeah.
And is that meaning that, I'm being honest, the quality I'm seeing at Ketchum last couple of times I've been up there has been brilliant. It's been some great football. And the quality and the talent, do you think the influx of foreign players, whilst maybe not helping our international side, because let's face it, they've spent the last 2 years not even bringing in a left back, which seems absolutely bloody ludicrous. But then if you've got a league full of foreign players, it's understandable.
I think Gareth's right. I think it has. And the reason largely is, and you touched on it when you said that Cali was given time to hone his craft, is the academy system now sucks in a whole load of kids, and I'm probably one out of, I don't know, thousands makes it. And so the rest have to do something, you know, and people develop at different ages. So, you know, at the age when they're told you can sign professional forms, they may not have actually developed. And so they kind of, the players themselves have had to become more realistic. There's more money down the pyramid now, which helps. But you know, that's where they aim now, to make a living out of playing Division 1, Division 2, and maybe lower, because that's where they can actually survive.
Can I ask you a question, Greg? Because you know more about this than me or than any of us. When you've got players who aren't quite good enough to make it, are they ever streamed into the world of officialdom?
In what way, mate? Sorry.
As referees or no, people, no, or whatever we call them now?
No, very rarely. It takes a special breed to become an official.
Yeah, and, but if you've got a kid of 16, 17, who loves the game, who's just not going to make it, is it ever suggested to them maybe you should look toward refereeing?
I think it's suggested to them, but it's a big leap for a player mentally. You know, if you've been you've had the academy dream, you've had people telling you you're brilliant, taking you through the academy age groups, and then you get that cruel conversation that says you're being cut. You know, that if at that point they say, but you could become a referee or a linesman, it's not as attractive.
But it's a career. It is
a career path. And, you know, I mean, the state of officials, we could do an entire program on that because they're generally shit. But you know, so I think it would improve it from that point of view, because at least these people have played at a decent level and have a good knowledge of it, and it would be a career for them, particularly now. Money is in the referee and linesman game if you work your way up the pyramid. But most of them still want to play. You know, it's the joy of playing, isn't it?
Yeah. No, it's just something I've always wondered, that's all.
Mm. In that similar vein, and I'm trying to remember, is it Eastbourne Borough or one? I can't remember now, but it's someone can't remember his name now, but it's someone we're trying to get our hands on to see if we can get on the show. And it's a club owner. It might be Eastbourne or someone. And anyway, they are going out their way to highlight the damage that is done to these young players when they're just blown out by the bigger clubs. And he actually tries to give them a break in a lower league football. But he's also trying to build an awareness of the damage this is doing to youngsters who are built up to think that they're going to be, and then they're just carted off. And no one gives them any support or any counselling. And, you know, it's a lot for a lot of these lads. Nigel will back this up, no doubt, from when he started. It's a life dream to play football for these kids. And
it's not just them, of course, it's their parents as well, you know, because they bought into the dream. And they're told how wonderful they are throughout all the years in the academy, right up until the end. And then it's a really harsh one-off conversation that says, we're not keeping you, you're not going forward from here. And it must be devastating. You know, I don't think it's the right way of doing it, but
you've got to be mentally strong. I got turned down by Watford. They hadn't seen enough of me. And they said they didn't think I was strong enough, so they weren't going to offer me an apprenticeship. And I was lucky that I was pretty, you know, I believed in myself. And I played for the County Cup final. It was North Hearts versus... North London versus Hertfordshire, and the North London sides were made up mostly of the Arsenal and Tottenham players. And I went out there, and you know, I wanted to win. I didn't let what they told me affect me, and I got man of the match. And I got a phone call the next day saying that they changed their minds. So you are right about, I think parents these days, they put a lot of pressure on the kids. They tell them they're better than what they are sometimes, and. You know, I think the parents are seeing it as a obviously they want to be a footballer, but because of the money that's involved in it now. I mean, I'm watching a kid being coached this afternoon when I took the dog for a walk. One kid getting coached by one bloke, and I'm not kidding you, no amount of coaching he gives him is going to make that kid a pro player. I mean, I watch a lot of kids' footballs when I was younger, and you can tell the ones that have got a bit of talent in them and that you can work with. But I think there's a lot of parents now are pushing their kids, getting them personal trainers and stuff like that. And they're filling their heads with belief when maybe it's not there. So it's some of the kids, but it's a big fishing net now, isn't it? They just stick the net in, grab what they can.
Sky have done some good documentaries about that. But the Beckham documentary, what he was put through to get there and the belief he had, but it was his parents, just his dad in particular. Brutalizing him into being a pro. It's crazy. But this thing about fame and it suddenly being pulled away, you know, that's not just in football, that's in all forms of entertainment. And we've seen only on Friday how the extreme of that, you know, absolutely. When you're famous, you've had all this stuff and it's suddenly gone and you're, you know, not even 30 and it's all over for you and you've been in these, you know, these heights and then there's nothing left. What do you do? Where do you go? And I've had talks to a lot of footballers about this. So, you know, what do you do when it's all over? You know, and it's when you wake up and you haven't got to go to training that day because
you become a DJ. Yeah.
Become a DJ.
That's what you do. You become a DJ.
Very good. We are.
I've got so many comments coming on, and we've really got a great topic, obviously, going here. We have got other things we need to cover, though. So I'm going to quickly whiz through these, and I'm going to try and move off the subject. I think we might need a part two at some point. Greg, I know your time is very tight, but maybe we're going to have to get back together, the four of us, because we really are provoking a lot of interaction, which is great, you know. Okay, so Dan, hello Dan, one of the lads who's normally with us, one of the organisers of football. The days of groups of youngsters going to top flight football are gone. It's unaffordable and you are not allowed to go on. Oh, this is on about the fans, okay? And you're not allowed to go on your own under a certain age. A generation has been lost and it will ultimately catch up in the Premier League attendances in the future. Interesting one. My take on that is, Dougie, you know, I remember going to Watford on my own. I remember going up to Liverpool on my own. A couple of mates were scousers I was at school with. I got invited up and we jumped on a supporters coach that was leaving out of Milton Keynes area, went up and stood on the cop. And I was only about
I used to go, and me and my mate Clive, when we were 13, used to go and stand on the shed at Chelsea. And it was insane. But nowadays, that's what we used to do.
Nowadays, there is age limits now, isn't there? And then the other point, I'm going to slightly disagree with you, Dan, only on the basis that I believe you're right what you say. It will catch up with Premier League attendances, but I believe it will lose the true fans. And we're seeing it in non-league. A lot of youngsters now beginning to support the local, which is absolutely brilliant. But I always believe that the tourists will fill them stadiums.
They will, absolutely.
Yeah, and that's a problem. And that's why football clubs don't give two shits about their supporters these days.
We don't necessarily go to football for the football. We go for everything else that's part of the day out. It's like meeting up
with your mates, having a beer, having a bite to eat. Yeah.
In the good old days, something else as well. You know, that's what it was all about. It was part of growing up. And that's all gone now. You know, and it's, whether it's a good or bad thing is debatable.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the younger ones are going to the sort of non-league matches now. They simply can't afford to go to big matches like.
Yeah.
And the tickets are ridiculous, aren't they, to get a ticket now? So, I mean, you're not going to want to spend 85 quid on a ticket when you can go down the road and watch your local team and probably have a better laugh.
15 quid I paid yesterday. I don't know what it is at Billericay, Greg.
It's 15 for an adult, but I think it's something like, I don't know, six for somebody who's under 16.
They charge under 16 to £2.
Blimey. Mind you, we've got a load who's sneaking through the fence at the back. I caught a couple of weeks ago. I mean, you can't knock it, can you?
No. Yeah, but didn't that used to go off in the day? People climbing up trees to get them. Oh, dear. Gareth, I've got so many coming through. It's brilliant. Gareth Newbury, best Prem games are the highest scoring ones where it is chaos. There are the weather conditions are rubbish and fancy tactics are out the window. Another man who obviously doesn't like modern day football there. absolutely bang on. What else we got there? This is from, Stuart, facts are 1% make it pro. Wow. If that's a fact, 1%. Well, 1%. Wow.
Yeah.
You're nodding, Greg. You agree?
I don't even know it's that many.
I would have said it's less than that.
I would say it's less than that. But, you know, it's a shocking figure. Really is. Because these days they'll go out and buy players, won't they? You know, it's not about an academy system other than the fact that it makes them money. But that's a different conversation.
They want success straight away, don't they? The clubs now want success straight away. So the only way you buy success is to go and get the better players. They can't wait for people to develop into world-class players. They need it straight away. It's not just them. The managers are under pressure to deliver. And it's like a domino train, you know, going all the way down.
Just interesting comment backing up what you were saying, Nigel, from Stuart Higgins there. And I'm taking it this is in Ireland. I can relate to Callie. Parents are paying for more advanced training elsewhere to develop their son. And I manage Temple League United, is it? I'll probably pronounce that totally wrong. But that'll be in Ireland because I'm sure Stuart's from living in Ireland. So that comes from someone managing the team. I think there's a question coming from Terry Curran here for you. Nigel, if you could replay just one game from the, it's changing the subject, which is probably a good thing because we're running, going to run deadly out of time, which is great. It, you know, people are loving it. So, Nigel, if you could replay just one game from your career, what would it be and why? I normally save them from the end, but I've been caught out. Well, there.
Obviously, it'd be the cup final, wouldn't it, against Everton?
But this time you'd try and win it, yeah?
Yeah. I've been pretty lucky. I've been pretty lucky with the clubs that I've been with. We've been quite successful, but yeah, it'd be nice to play that one again.
Noble Andy Gray, that would be probably the thing from the kickoff. all right, just one last on this, and then I really will move it on. But there's nothing stopping us getting together again on this at some stage in the future, if you guys are happy to, because I think we could talk all night about this. Yeah, good point. And the clubs know this. And a 13-year-old kid on his own won't spend a fortune there. So what he's saying there is that half the reason is if he ain't got mum and dad with him, he ain't going to spend the level of money in the shop. And that's a really good point because they've got these marketing strategists at these clubs that will probably go, no, let's ban people under 14, under 16 without an adult because it's the adult that will give them the money to spend in the shop. He's probably yeah, right. Probably. Okay. Whew, wow, that's... mate, no, Stuart, that's it. I'm coming off this at the minute. Right, okay. I want to talk now very quickly because I really want to... I'm going to limit some of what we're doing, but very quickly, just want to talk about alcohol. So it's been circulated this week that there are possible reviews going to be taking place about drinking alcohol in a football ground. Now, one of the crazy things, and this is where this is good to have Greg here because he owns the ladies team who are in the... Oh, we'll come on to that. But they want to trial this at ladies football. I mean... Trial it at ladies football.
Well, we play at a level where so Women's Super League, Championship, plus Southern Premiership. But you can already drink at our games anyway. So I think they're talking WSL and Championship.
Okay.
So it's again, it's a level thing where you can drink alcohol and where you can't. But it's a different crowd. You know, the people who go and attend. Different. WSL games are totally different to those people who would go and watch Watford Luton or any kind of game in the Premier League or Championship. So I it doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand that.
No. I mean, non-league right now, like we're saying, there's some big crowds in non-league. I'm not sure. What's the situation in the National League? Are they allowed alcohol? So I heard somewhere that they...
National League can't. We're level below that. We can. So... you can't take a glass out there, unfortunately, but you can take, because it tastes nice around, but you can take a plastic, more solid plastic cup out with you. You pay a...
Yeah, most
people have got a scheme where you pay a pound deposit and then you can get that back. You know, but you can go and drink all the way around the ground. You take the beers with you.
Yeah.
And to be honest, you don't really see any trouble. I mean, this is the odd...
But
you get that anywhere, and that's not
I don't believe that. Do you know what? The fact that if you can drink, the problem is people, and Dougie, I'm sure you back me up with this, right? Because you can't drink in a ground, you binge drink before the game, which is worse.
Yeah. Well, as a non-drinker, I don't like being around drunk people. It pisses me off.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't see the problem with drinking while you're watching football, as long as you haven't got glass, that's fairly understandable for fairly obvious reasons. But I genuinely don't see the problem with it. You know, I've never understood it. Because all you've got is blokes at half time just banging in as many pints as they can.
Exactly. So or even in some bars in the places, you can go down during the game and have a pint in the bar and go back to the game. It's ludicrous.
So what's
really the
point? It makes no sense at all.
So yesterday, I was at Ketchum Sudbury, and this was the first day they introduced their cup scheme, which so they've got this cup now, and you pay £2. You can either keep it as a souvenir, or you take it back to the bar when you finish drinking, and they'll give you £2 back. And they're solid, you know, not going to hurt anybody. Good idea. But I just wanted to, a funny side to this gentleman. What I noticed yesterday was the young entrepreneurs that, pay £2 to get in and probably go home with about 30 quid in their pocket.
Yeah.
Because that you see them like all like maybe 10, 11 year old lads running around looking for guys who, because you know what guys are like, they'll have a few, they'll just leave the cup or whatever, they're not going to bother about their 2 quid. So the youngsters are running around. I could see it, the young entrepreneurs, good lads, oh, yeah, that did tickle me. Nigel, I mean, as a player, I mean, I don't suppose you really would even have a. Would you have a thought on it as an ex-player, the drinking in the ground?
Not really, no. I mean, I got to be honest. I was like one pint of lager shandy, man, when I played football. It's only after I finished football that I started like to have a few drinks. But, I used to drive everywhere. So, I never drunk alcohol when I played football. So, yeah.
Right.
But I don't think it's good. You know, it's exactly what Greg said. And, they're going to go to the pubs. They're going to, if they want to get smashed before the game, they'll do it. You know, I actually think people would be more sensible if they grab a couple of pints inside the grounds.
Well, it means they'll not panic to get another pint in. Quick, we get one more in before the game kick off, you know, and we get another one in. Oh, yeah, get another one in. They come up 10 minutes later pissed. Whereas they ain't got to panic, maybe, you know, binging in the pub beforehand. You know, I mean, like I think I mentioned to you guys beforehand, there's five clubs where you've got hotels overlooking the pitch. Norwich is probably the best example. And, if you are caught with alcohol in your hotel room, you'll be thrown out, not given a refund, and banned from the hotel because of the law. Guys, I was going to talk about the new Chelsea badge. It's ridiculous. I'm not going to harp about it. Let me show you it. The only thing for me is there's a bit of arrogance in my view that they are trying to promote. This is their they're moving into their 120th anniversary as a club, and there you go. Ugh, horrible, horrible, horrible. The LDN is for London, and this is Chelsea trying to claim that they are the club of London. So there's a degree of arrogance. I would have had opened this up to a discussion, but we're running out of time. I did want to talk about ownership in non-league. You know what? It's a big discussion for another day. We ain't got time now. We'll touch on ladies' football. Then I want to open up for Dougie to talk about the new project. I don't think I'm even going to do my Gary, what's the score today? No, I don't think I am. But anyway, Billericay, Greg, obviously you've now taken over the ladies' side. Obviously, your men's team got a 1-0 win against Dulwich Hamwick yesterday, which should put them joint top with Dover.
That's right,
You're having a good season then.
Unbeaten in the league. So, a lot of draws, but unbeaten in the league.
You've been on a downward slope, haven't you?
To
a degree.
Only one relegation, Gary. It's you know, I mean, and that's why I stopped being an owner, because...
Am I being hard on that?
You've been hard. You know, we dropped one league.
You're a club that should be up in the national leagues.
That's a better way of putting it.
That's what I mean. Your facilities, blew me away.
Yeah.
To me, you being in that league is you went, because you went down and you struggled the first season down there, didn't you? A little bit.
We did, and it's hard. It's hard because when you drop stop it. When you drop down a league, you're everybody's FA Cup final for a year, aren't you? You know, everybody wants to have a go at you, and also there's money in those lower leagues, so there's always one or two teams who are investing to try and get up, and so it's not natural about, you know, you've dropped down, so you're going to go back up again. I mean, there are teams that have struggled, that have come down as well, who are struggling again this season, so it's not easy to get back up again, but maybe this is the season, eh?
Yeah, no, it's where you should be, mate. It's where you should be. So the ladies' team, now, I need to just understand how the pyramid works, mate, because when I've looked it up, it comes up with, which confused the life out of me, Premier League, Premier Division.
Yeah.
Is that what you're in?
So there's the Women's Super League, which is the Chelsea's and Man City's and Arsenal's. There's the Championship, which is Newcastle, Southampton, Bournemouth, people like that. But then it gets regionalised, and that's where there are two Premier Divisions. So there's a Southern Premier Division, which is what we're in, and there's a Northern Premier Division as well, which is supposed to just limit some of the travel down. But, you know, we were in Plymouth today, which is a long way from Essex. But that's the way it is. So if we were promoted, we'd go into the Championship.
Right, okay. And you're currently fifth, is that right, in your league?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you beat Plymouth today 2-1.
No. They beat us 2-1.
Sorry. We slope again. I don't know. So very quickly, because I really need to get over to Buggy. The transition from men's football to ladies' football, how have you found that? And I wanted to talk about the finances in both men's and ladies, but we ain't gonna have time. But
no.
So the transition for you.
Yeah, so I'm not transitioning, by the way, just to make that clear. but the
you
transition,
know what I mean.
somebody said it and I can't remember who, you know. I prefer the women's game to be involved with it because it is more family based, it is community based. You know, so we get whole families coming to watch our games, and that's not as true in the men's game. And I think it's still true that there's a bit more appreciation even from the players, because it's still not got to the stage where that expectation that we talked about early on and that entitlement that people have been telling me I'm great and I'm going to have a career and suddenly I haven't. You know, that's not there quite. So, you know, But personally, I love the women's game, but I still love the men's game as well. You have to treat them, in my head, I have to treat them as two totally different games, by the way.
And I'm going to give you my quick opinion. I mean, I'm not into women's football, to be honest, and I'm open and honest about it. But what I do believe, the mistake being made, is they should have treated it as two separate entities.
Yeah.
And it's... I fear for people like you, because there are many women's teams that are in fairly high positions that are not associated with a Premier League
or
Championship club. And for me, if you've got a women's side that's basically funded off the back end of the men's game, which is what I believe happens a lot higher up, because the amount of money is certainly not generated necessarily from attendances, is that in the long run, because of that, is that not going to make it a very, very difficult thing for a club like yourselves to progress in the ladies' game?
Yeah, I mean, even in our league, we've got some teams, Ipswich, just to use them as an example, who are full-time, you know, they're full-time professionals and we're not. And a lot of teams like us are not. So it becomes more difficult to compete because of wages, because of time spent actually training and stuff. So you're absolutely right. And if it just carried on this trajectory, we'd end up with the leagues looking exactly the same, men's and the women's, because it's all about money.
That's going to be a bad day, I think.
Yeah, I'll just say one more thing and then I'll
move on to Dougie. Yeah, and then I'll move on to Dougie.
But, you know, the one hope is that more investment comes in. You know, so you know, I mean, Ipswich is sponsored by Ed Sheeran, and maybe I should get a guitar and learn how to play it, see if I could knock out a few tunes. But there's a lot of interest, and we've been approached over the last 2 weeks by two companies who want to get involved, and maybe that changes the scenario, because we'll see. But it's a good topic to discuss, and I'll let you move on to Dougie.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, we've half covered everything really today. So there's so much to talk about. So I'm hoping that both you and Dougie will have enjoyed this evening, and you'll return when you can, and we can pick up a lot of what where we've left off. Okay, now, Dougie, obviously, like we've mentioned, some of the films you've been involved with, or you've written, or you've directed. Your latest project, and I'm not going to tell people about it. Most people, I hope, would know about it, what happened with Roy. But I think you probably need to start from the beginning, mate, for those that don't.
Yeah, before I do that, on the subject of women's football, can I recommend a new book to everybody? It's by a woman called Gail Emms, who was the world badminton champion. And it's called The Lost Lionesses. And it's about the England women's football team who represented Great Britain, not England, Great Britain, in the 1971 World Cup in Mexico. It's an absolutely amazing story. They're going to make it into a TV drama. But the book is something really special.
What's it again, everyone?
It's called The Lost Lionesses.
The Lost Lionesses.
It's just come out. It's the truth about the very first England female World Cup team. The unofficial.
The Lost Lionesses. Okay, yeah, people, really you heard book. That.
Anyway, so enough about someone else's bloody book.
Yeah, Roy
Lana, for those who may not know, was the guy who took on the terrorists in Borough Market in 2017 and sustained numerous life-threatening injuries. And he was the guy who famously shouted out, "FU1 Millwall," as he took them on. And it's a story we're doing. He wrote a book called The Lion of London Bridge, which is not long out. And I was approached a few years ago to do a film based on his life. But I didn't do it because he wasn't ready. Because he suffers with PTSD on the back of what happened, obviously. And he just wasn't ready to talk about his story. Talk about what happened. Now the book's come out. They approached me again a few months ago, and I said, "Yeah, we'll do it. Let's do this." And it's really the story of what happened on that night, but also what's happened to him since, and the fact that he became the victim of this media witch hunt, and was denied the George Medal. He's never received any compensation. At one point, he was on the British government's anti-terror watch list and an ISIS hit list at the same time. And he had absolutely no protection from anybody. And there's lots of other stuff that went on at that time, which is reminiscent in some ways of the post office scandal, the way he was just left. He was just left to his own devices, and just like, he's effectively been airbrushed out of the history of that event. Yes. And yet they estimate he saved at least 30 lives that night, because all three of these guys who were all kept waving machetes around, he took one on, and the other two came back to try and rescue their mate, because Roy had him, really. And when they came back, it allowed other people plenty of time to escape, and then the armed police turned up and they shot them all dead, and Roy was basically left to bleed out on the floor. And it's the most incredible story. We're actually on Sky News tomorrow morning at 9:20 to talk about it a bit more. And so we're doing the film. Leo Gregory, who played Bovary Greenstreet, is going to play Roy. They look remarkably similar. If anyone's seen the photos on my social media, would have seen.
I should have uploaded.
That's all right. We took a photo of him and Roy together, both wearing glasses, and they do look remarkably similar. And what we've done, because these things take so long to pull together, and bearing in mind that this is going to be a very controversial movie, for fairly obvious reasons, given the current political climate. We're already hitting resistance about for funding in particular. So we took the decision to crowdfund the initial development fund. And we set up a Just Giving page last week. We've raised 25% of what we want to raise already. And if anyone wants to support that, you know, even just by the price of a pint or a cup of coffee, if they go to my social media, which is all Facebook's the same, @Dougie Brimson, you know, just Dougie Brimson, just search me out. And the link to the Just Giving page will be on there. We've had one donation of 500 quid already, which is remarkable. And we've had others of £5, but it makes no difference. Every little helps, because this is a people's story. You know, this is working class. Yeah. This is a story about just a normal, homeless, working class guy who did something extraordinary and has been airbrushed from history, and it's absolute disgrace. And I mentioned the post office scandal thing. It's not on that scale, but to Roy, it is on that scale because it's happening to him, and it's still happening to him. You know, it was 7 years ago. Do you know he's never had any counselling? Still. It's unbelievable. They took his driving licence off him. He still hasn't got it back. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. The stuff that's gone on to this guy. And it's a fantastic story in its own right about how he rebuilt his own life, because he had to. So we're really excited about it. Yeah, that's Leo.
There you go. That's Leo Gregory, for those that will recognise him. Yeah. And that's Ray
Roy Lyle. Stop calling him Ray.
Poor, he's on my friends list as well, Roy. So that's
yeah. So it's a great story. It's going to be a really interesting movie. You know, we're only raising a small amount to start with. The rest of it will come. We think it probably come from America, the money, because that's where I'm looking now. But I'll be writing it.
Okay, that's the link there, people.
I've started already. So yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting, but it's going to be, as I say, it's going to be controversial, because everybody knows what happened with Roy. You know, he was convicted of hurling racist abuse at someone. We're not going to shy away from that. You know, he's not a saint. You know, he's just a normal English patriotic bloke. And he deserves the George Medal. He deserves the compensation he should have got. And part of the aim of the movie is to make sure he finally gets it.
No,
that shut you all up.
That just sounds good, doesn't it?
You know, I mean, I knew the story, and I know how he's been shunned, and I know. But when, because you're so close to it, when you go through it in the way you did, then it's. And comparing it as well, it's another scandal, isn't it?
It's amazing. And when the first time I met him was actually in the Black and Blue bar where it happened. And I said to him, how the hell can you come back here where all this stuff happened, like where we're standing now? And he just said, I have to, because it's the only way I can get my head around what actually went on. Because it was just an unthinking act. That I'm not backing away. And he was with a lot of geezers who all backed away, you know, as most of us would. You know, some guys were, and it wasn't just the fact they had machetes strapped to their hands, they were also wearing fake suicide vests.
Yeah, they were, yeah.
Which is why the police wouldn't go in. And so he was on his own, and he just wouldn't, it never occurred to him to not take them on. You know, it's insane. And that the movie asked the question, you know, how do we regard bravery in this country? You know, it very different from how we did 50, 60 years ago. But how would we do it now? What would you do now? You know, as a collective, what would you do? If you see someone, you know, having a go at a woman on a train, you just sit there staring at your phone now. But 10 years ago, you wouldn't have done that.
Yeah, no, absolutely not.
And you know, this is
how I've seen guys get good hidings for it in a woman, you know.
Yeah.
Coming out of a pub and so. I'm going back, you know, 80s now. I remember late 80s coming out of a pub, me and a few mates and some geezer. He proper was giving his missus an hiding, so he got a good hiding.
Yeah, that's you know. Sure. But this is that's those are the themes in the film. you know, it's bravery, you know, is it? And it's about this woke culture as well. It's kind of underpinning the reasons he's been ignored for so long. And we're just exploring that. It's just, yeah. I mean, when I offered it to Leo, he just bit my hand off straight away.
And he's been in some cracking movies, Leo, as well.
He's a great actor. He's
absolutely brilliant actor. I've seen a lot of his movies. Yeah. And really good. It's a crazy story because the man really did get chopped up and all, didn't he?
Yeah, he had he was stabbed in the neck, chest, back, arms, stomach. Proper life-threatening stuff, which he hasn't fully recovered from. You know, plus the mental health. You know, the mental health element of it. It was,
He's so you're very, on Sky very tomorrow. Guy.
Pardon?
You're on Sky tomorrow.
Yeah, we're on Sky tomorrow morning at 9:30.
Last week you was on GB News.
Yeah, we're on GB News. I mean, we've had coverage in the Sun, we've had coverage in the Mail, we've had coverage.
And that's a massive step forward.
Yeah, I mean,
you would not have got on Sky.
That's the sort of coverage that you know any independent movie would kill for. But that's how big a story this is. Guy, you know, there's that much interest in it. So that's why we want to do it. We want to film it next year if we can.
Yeah.
So we're not going to be reliant on raising money from the likes of the lottery because we probably wouldn't get it. I mean, that's the reality. We probably wouldn't get.
So it's my phone going off again. Take that.
Link along the bottom. As you can see, I've just put the link up.
Oh, thank you.
There as well for the GoFundMe page to help get this film off the ground. Got to ask you this though, Dougie. On GB News the other night, he kept calling you Doogie. Now,
yeah, it's really annoying. That was all the time.
And I'm thinking, I'm sure it's Dougie.
It is Dougie. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
But I'll tell you a quick anecdote. I was on Channel 4 News a long time ago, and they asked me what I wanted to be introduced as, and I said, author and screenwriter, which is fair enough. And he said, not reformed hooligan. And I said, if you introduce me as reformed hooligan, I'm going to walk off. This is a finite live news show. And they said, oh, we wouldn't do that. And that's what they did. And I got up and walked off live on it.
And you served 18 years in the RAF as well, didn't you?
I did, yeah. It's a big day coming up soon.
Sorry?
It's a big day coming up in a couple of weeks. Remember, it's Sunday.
You served Queen and Country there, didn't you, for 18 years?
Yeah, from 76 to 94.
You miss that? Do you miss the RAF?
Yeah, sometimes, yeah. Not at the moment. It'll be incredibly busy at the moment.
Oh, I bet it will be. Yeah.
But it's a fantastic life, you know.
My dad was in the RAF.
Pardon?
Yeah, that's how I ended up getting born in Singapore. He was.
I read your dad was in the RAF.
He was at RAF Changi in Singapore.
Yeah.
So I was. Nice. I think I left there before it was one, but yeah, he was. He used to drive the motor patrol boats.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, there you go.
And then they got a station up at Tenby, I think, as well, didn't they?
Yeah, there's still one there, isn't there? They've still got some.
Yeah, so he got posted to Tenby from Singapore.
Very nice. Well, there you go.
We're seeing it all over. It's been some show tonight. So, look, I'm going to leave that link up for a little while because I will be finishing off with another link for what we're trying to do at the moment. But let me quickly put the Roy Lana link up there for a little while. So, look, it's been an amazing show tonight, guys. So interesting. And we've not covered half of what we wanted to. Just seeing if there's anything else. Right, I've got a couple of clips. Let's get them out. Here we go. Actually, I did want to do this, gentlemen. This is not football, but I think it's quite important to mention this true British hero. So I don't know if you're aware, people are aware, but the really sad news today, Chris Hoy has terminal cancer, been told he's got a couple of years left to live. At the same time as he had his diagnosis, which he's had his diagnosis for a period of time, they've got two young children, and his wife also been diagnosed with cerebral palsy. So, extremely sad story, but he's very positive, and, you know, they say 2 to 4, you know, he might last 10, don't know, but a true sportsman of this country, and with his wife diagnosed the day before, I think it was, I read, with cerebral palsy.
Wow.
And they've got two young children, so we wish them with all our hearts the very best, and good luck with the battle that he now faces, probably the biggest battle of his life, you know, but true hero. So sad.
Yeah. So,
okay, got a couple of bits here to show you. So this is from a foreign grassroots league game. Now, I don't know if you see part of the West Ham Tottenham game yesterday, but I got a feeling the West Ham players were watching this video before the game.
Bravo!
No problem with that tackle. He got there as quick as he could.
But what a bit of skill and all, though, from the lad in the yellow. The reason I showed that, if you didn't see it yesterday, it was a proper kicking off at the at Tottenham's ground with West Ham. And initially, I don't know if you've seen it, but he's actually pushed the first player in, pushed him in the face, which should be sending off. Then everyone's jumped in, and he's done it again to Richarlison. And he had got a yellow card.
Yeah, that's a shock, Richarlison getting involved in it again, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because he's well known for staying on his feet.
Yeah, isn't he? Bloody, and anyway, the VAR then jumped in, got involved. And now it's an interesting one. So I might be totally wrong here. So the ref has issued him with a yellow card, yeah, officially. Then VAR's jumped in and said and showed him what's gone on. He's then, now I don't know, the yellow card came out again and then it went to red. Now, I don't know, but in my mind, is that a problem? Because if he pulls a red out, he ain't going to pull the yellow out as well, is he? He had the red in that and the yellow
in
that.
Did he book him twice then?
It's two different people that he pushed.
It's two, yeah. So
if he's probably booked him twice, he's probably given a yellow card for the first one, seen the second one on the TV. And
yeah, I mean, both were it was a complete sending off offence from the very beginning, no ifs or buts. But the interesting thing there is where VAR then jumped involved, if he's issued the two yellows, I'm guessing the FA will get involved with that and he'll probably face more proceedings. But officially, he only one match ban. If it had been straight red, it would have been a 3-match ban automatically, you know?
Yeah. I wondered if he was taking the yellow away and putting the red there.
So, and that's what I don't know. I absolutely don't know on that one at all. So, but very interesting. That's why I showed that clip. Mm. And that's why I said West Ham players must have been watching that, because it reminded me of watching that as quite naughty, I know, but it was quite amusing. One more clip, guys, and then we'll be looking to wrap the show up. This is a midweek game last week, Haringey Borough goal. Let's have a look at. Who said there's no passion in non-league football, eh? Fantastic.
Great.
Okay, so yeah, we've not done a lot of what I'd like to have done, but that's because the show's been absolutely exceptional tonight, guys. Honestly, it's been brilliant. I hope you both really enjoyed it. Sorry, what was that, mate? I didn't hear you, Dougie. I lost your sound. No. Yeah, it's been absolutely brilliant. And I hope you both enjoyed it. And I hope that will lead you to doing a part two, maybe. And we can go over things again. And also, Dougie, we'd love to keep up with any news that we can keep people, because people have shown already that this story is what it needs to be, and that is out there. So we'd love to keep on top of that with how you're getting on and how the fundraising's getting on and that. You can't hear?
Can't hear you now.
You can't hear me?
Can now.
Oh, can you hear me now, Dougie? Dougie can't hear me. You can hear me, guys, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'll write a note for Dougie. We've lost you, mate. No. okay, right, look, Dougie can't hear me. Can you, ask Greg, ask if he can hear you?
Dougie, can you hear me?
No. Okay, he's lost our sound. Right, okay, everybody, we're going to call it a night. I normally go around the table, but it looks like we're probably going to have to miss Dougie out because he can't hear us. Lip read. I don't know. Okay.
I can't hear you. You're saying no, no, no.
No. I'll ring you, mate. I'll ring you. Right, that's it, folks. We're going to call it a day. Round the table quickly. Nigel, sorry. I know you've been a bit left out tonight. But
no, I've enjoyed it.
It's been brilliant, isn't it? Really enjoyed it.
Looking forward to seeing that film. That sounds really interesting. Obviously, good to see Greg again.
Good to see you, mate.
We need to catch up at some stage. Have a drink together. Yeah. But yeah, I'll be playing some music on Mixcloud later on. Anyone wants to join me? The link's on my Facebook page.
That's it. Look for Cali.
A few organs, a few shot clocks.
someone put their fair tackle. Which I didn't put up because it came in after we were talking about it. Gareth Newbury, women. Yeah, let me put it up. Women's footy got two of my daughters into the sport, and we watch all footy together all the time now. Brilliant. There you go. Exactly what you were saying.
Greg sent me a few pictures of the team scoring goals, the girls. I'll tell you what, there's some cracking goals in there.
Yeah, there are.
Yeah, so maybe I send them to you and we'll get them on next time.
Yeah, I'll send you some footage.
Yeah.
I really have tried to keep up with the messages. It has been a big one tonight, I have to be honest. So if I haven't put yours out, I think I've got most of them. Gareth Newbury there, heartbreaking. So that'll be talking about
Chris Hoy.
The story of Roy. Terry Cohen, great show, boys. All the very best with the project, Dougie. Yeah, and I'll pass that on. And Terry, yeah, if you'd love to come, we'd love you to come on, mate, if you're up for it, and come on with us one week. Let's get in touch if you're up for that, mate. What we got? We've got loads, mate. Wish Hoy a pat. Yeah, I wish Hoy a pain. It's such a sad story that with the two of them and they got young children. We do wish, we all wish that, Paul. We all wish that, mate. Absolutely. I'll just get through these. Oh, I already put that one up. Really, absolutely, Dan. Amazing. So many. Wanted to get Graham Polford yellow out. Wanted. third yellow out. That's probably related to a conversation, but I've lost track with that one. Sorry, Graham. Gareth, sorry. What we got there? Plenty of passion in non-league football. Absolutely. Really have got in. I'll pass the number on. Yeah, thanks, Terry. That'd be great. Would love to get you on, mate.
Wow, that's Watford women against QPR.
We scored a belt against QPR.
When do you play Watford, right, Greg?
Sorry? I'll drop in later, Callie.
When do you play Watford?
We've played them. They beat us by one goal. We've got the reverse fixture at Billericay in the new year.
Oh, right.
Okay. So, last words from you, Callie.
Well, I've already said, I really enjoyed the show today, but I'll let Greg have the last words.
Yeah, Greg.
Yeah, thanks. No, I really enjoyed it. It's good to be on again.
Yeah, brilliant having you on.
Good to meet Dougie. Good to see you too. Yeah. Really enjoyed the show. So, yeah, who knows? Yeah, if you invite me back, I might actually come.
Well, yeah, absolutely. From me, I just want to finish off with, as you know, we've decided we're going to adopt a charity, and we've adopted, as we've been quite heavily publicising this week, Team Michaela, who is a girl. She's 18 now, been fighting a cancerous tumour on the brain since the age of 4, and unfortunately will fight that battle for the rest of her life. In return, she, 10 years ago, at the age of 8, said to her mum, "I wish we could help other children," who she's obviously been around, who suffer from cancer. And that born the birth of Team Michaela. And what they do, they raise money, £500 a time. There's no money going else other than obviously typical insurance costs, stuff like that. No wages, nothing like that. It's pure goes to children with cancer. And what they do, they have what they call a treasure box or a treat. And it's £500 buys a treat for a child suffering with cancer. And the child can choose what they want, or they can have a treat a treasure box with goodies in as a surprise. They might want a PlayStation. 50% of the treats are big family days out, trips out, and they pay for everything, and to the value of £500. So every time, what our goal is to raise £500 and pass it on. And then we'll bring back to you guys who have helped to support this charity. And mate, not all, they're children. But some we'll be able to show you the picture of the child smiling with the gifts that we've been able to provide as the proper football family that we all are now. That's how I see it. But not always, because some parents don't want a child. But we'd be able to provide information enough to say, this is who got it and what they got. It's £500 that we want to raise. Now, where we are, and this is where I need your help, I'll put it up in a minute. I'm just going to stick this up. So this is, and they've had the Queen's Award MBE for voluntary groups as well. So they're amazing, amazing people. And all from this young lady, Michaela, who herself constantly having to battle with cancer. So what we've got, £600, folks. In actual fact, we've got £620 now. We've set up our own funding page, which I'm going to put a link up in a second. It's on all our platforms. Now, we've got, on the 8th of November, we're attending a charity event, and we've got £620 in a kitty at the moment. And we want to make that £1,000 so that we can hand over two treats, okay? To them on the night, which will be amazing. It'll blow them away, and we know that we're going to give two children with cancer a smile. But I need your help to get that amount, and then after that, we'll just raise, every time we raise £500, that will go immediately, every penny, to give a treat to a child with cancer. But for now, I just want to reach that goal of 1,000 people. So if you can help me out with that, that'd be great. I'm going to pop the link here, but to be honest with you, folks, that probably won't. Yeah, there you go. That might work. If you want to get your phone out, go on. Get a pint, a cup of coffee. That's all it is. Whatever you can do to help us reach that £1,000 target will be absolutely brilliant. And then we're going to do it ongoing, and you know, we'll do some events. I'm going to try and tag in a few football clubs, so maybe can do a charity day and get the more info out about this wonderful charity who are looking to expand and do more, you know, but they need help, like all charities. But this is an amazing one. Okay, so that's that. But if you've missed that, don't worry. It's on all our platforms. Just click the link and you're away in. One last thing for me. Currently, our website is down and should be back up and running within the next two to three days due to some problems. But that should all be back up and running shortly. And that's it for me, gentlemen. So I wish you all... Nigel, next week, I'm away. So there'll be no show next week, people. There'll be a show the week after. I've lined up quite a few different guests as well, which is good. And we'll see you not next Sunday, but the Sunday after. Remember, Team Michaela, all the way. And that's it. I'm going to... Never ready, am I? Never, ever, ever ready with the lineup to the closing credits, but I am now. Right. As always, be safe. Have a lovely week. Yeah. And we'll see you all in 2 weeks.